Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It was one of the most explosive stories in recent memory, the downfall of financier and friend to the powerful Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein went from living an extravagant life of private planes, multiple residences, and even a 70-acre private island to dying alone by suicide in a federal jail cell, a registered sex offender, and an accused sex trafficker. The new limited series, Filthy Rich, based on the 2016 book by author James Patterson, carefully reexamines the rise of Epstein and his decades of damaging behavior by putting the focus on his victims. Now, that said, the series also does not shy away from very powerful and famous men who were in Epstein's orbit, including Alan Dershowitz, Prince Andrew, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, and former Trump Labor Secretary Alex Acosta, who was a U.S. attorney in Florida in 2008, who oversaw Epstein receiving an extremely lenient plea deal in a case involving solicitation prostitution from young girls. Filthy Rich can be seen on Netflix, and its director, Lisa Bryant, joins me. Lisa, welcome to All of It.
Oh, thank you so much.
So we learn, and we see very clearly in this doc, that he was a skilled liar from his early days. He lied about his education. He lied to get a job teaching at Dalton. He lied to get employment in finance. He was even caught in some of those lies. Why didn't his lies trip him up? How was he able to get over?
Well, I think his wealth and power really took over, and I think he was so charismatic. He just had a way about him. Everybody that we spoke with talked about, you know, he felt like he was the smartest one in the room. He only associated it with himself with people who could, you know, help him further his career or further his image. And I just think that, you know, he was just smart enough to carry any conversation that, you know, was presented, whether it was with academics or attorneys, anyone, and then all that money. And he would throw big parties. People liked to be around him. And I think he just had a con man way about him that was a pattern that we saw over and over again, a master manipulator ever since, you know, he graduated high school, really.
Now, you touch on it in the series, but how did Epstein make all that money?
That's a really good question. We do, you know, I think everything points to Leslie Wexner, who seems to be his only client of record. You know, he managed, just like he did everything else, to kind of nudge his way into his life, make him trust him. It's baffling, really, that, you know, a gazillionaire, really, like Leslie Wexner, would trust, you know, someone like Jeffrey Epstein, who may have managed, you know, portfolios of a few, you know, millionaires. He liked to claim he was a billionaire. But at the same time, you know, Leslie Wexner seemed to be in a different stratosphere, but that's exactly the type of person that he wanted to be close to. And he was introduced to him, you know, by some sort of a mutual friend, and he just kind of wormed his way into his life. And pretty soon, even more shocking is that Les Wexner turned over power of attorney to him. And then we learn, you know, over the years, actually we just learned that, you know, recently, that Epstein stole, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars from him. And Wexner now admits, you know, he was embarrassed that he was taken advantage of, and, you know, he can't believe it, had no idea. So, yeah, it is shocking, but we do believe, and all the evidence points to, that's where he really made his big money.
Now, the scope of his operation of abuse was incredible, and it's something you investigate in this, that he couldn't have done this alone, and he didn't do this alone. The series explains to us how people around his orbit aided him. How did this alleged sex trafficking enterprise work? Who was involved?
Well, I think there were a number of enablers, really, different groups and different types of enablers. You know, there were his business associates, his employees, pilots, drivers. There was Ghislaine Maxwell, the name that, you know, we now hear most as being like his top lieutenant or at the top of the pyramid scheme. At one time, it's reported, you know, they were dated and very close, but, you know, she was one of the main facilitators of these young underage girls for him. And all these people, you know, had some, you know, role one way or the other. Either they might have known, you know, exactly what was going on, they did know exactly what was going on, You know, and it's only through their silence that his behavior was allowed to continue. But, you know, he just, through these women, mainly it started with Ghislaine and some others, that his pyramid scheme of recruiting young girls for massages that quickly turned sexual, you know, just kept going and going and going for years and decades.
My guest is Lisa Bryant. She's the director of Filthy Rich on Netflix. So, you know, he had some people around him didn't talk, but you found a person who did talk, a former tech guy who installed Epstein's private cellular service on the island. His name is Steve. Let's play a clip. Here he is talking about the things he saw and how it affected him.
You tell yourself that you didn't know for sure and you never really saw anything. But that's just all rationalization. Jeffrey Epstein, he was a guy that concealed his deviance very well, but he didn't conceal it that well. One day, pool guy's on the island when I get there. He said, "Why are you doing this?" And I said, "I don't know. The money." And he said, "Do you have any children?" And I said, "Yeah, I have two daughters, 13 and 15. And he said, "Would you let your daughters come to the island?" And when he said that, I realized I wouldn't let my two children within 5 miles of that man. And I quit the next day. I don't believe Jeffrey Epstein ever regretted a single thing he did in his life. I think that he's one of those kinds of sociopaths that could afford to live out his perversions in any way that he wanted.
Why did Steve Scully finally agree to go on camera?
You know, I think he felt like being silent was not the right thing to do. I think he was very, very frustrated that it was able to go on for so long. Like he said in the clip, you know, he saw some things, you kind of rationalize it. He never blatantly saw Epstein himself really doing anything. He saw, you know, young girls around. He wasn't really sure if they were underage, and you know, he was making good money, and he was in and out, you know, generally when most people weren't there. So I think he wanted to do the right thing. And he, by coming forward, you know, he wants to encourage others to do the same. You know, he provided some very valuable testimony to the FBI, and I know that he feels that he thinks others should as well. There's a lot of people out there that, you know, still know things, and you know, he wants them to come forward as well and be brave. It's, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. You know, he's admitting, you know, some sort of culpability. They're not in doing anything, but, you know, kind of, you know, rationalizing it, looking the other way. So I commend him for coming forward.
My guest is Lisa Bryant, director of Filthy Rich on Netflix, which is about Jeffrey Epstein, the rise and fall of Jeffrey Epstein. When you went and sought out some of his victims, were they reluctant to talk? Did you have to convince anyone into it?
Well, first of all, we like to call them survivors because they are. Mm-hmm. They all are tremendous women who have been through hell and back and still go through, you know, hell every day. There's not a day that goes by. Every single survivor that we talk to has, you know, expressed how, you know, the trauma they experience just never goes away. And it's, you know, as you also see in the documentary, many of them have gone down deep, dark paths that I'm really proud to, you know, to show them as they are now, even though they're still coping. But, you know, they've come through the other side and survived. You know, there's some women that didn't survive that we learned about. And it was very difficult to get them to come forward. And we tried to be as compassionate as possible. You know, in the beginning, we started this documentary long before most people knew who he was. We started filming, actually, in production about 8.5 months before he was arrested. And it was extremely difficult then because he was alive. People feared him. And even after he was arrested, people feared him. But it was really, really tough in the beginning. And immediately we met with, you know, these survivors' attorneys, and we spoke with them and tried to earn their trust, first and foremost. And right away on our first trip, we were able to get, you know, attorney Bradley Edwards, Jack Scarola, some of the key, you know, attorneys involved, and they helped with some information and documents and things that would have taken a lot longer to get. And through that, you know, we just, you know, with a very, you know, dignified, tactful approach, you know, called on the women. And if someone didn't want to talk, we didn't push. You know, we have to respect them, and that's what all they deserve. They've, you know, been disrespected, and you know, they don't trust the media. And so we just, I met with them, talked on the phone with them, my team, everybody just did a really tremendous job in handling them with, you know, the care and respect that they deserved. And slowly but surely over time, you know, we built their trust, and more were willing to go on camera. And then after his arrest, you know, our world as a documentary kind of changed overnight, mm-hmm. because we'd already shot enough to kind of, to do a documentary. And we just really had to take a breath. We found ourselves putting on kind of our news hat, if you will. And documentaries don't generally follow, you know, breaking news, but, you know, there was no choice. And this was all of a sudden the biggest story on the planet. People all over the world had descended upon New York after his arrest. And, you know, it was, you think it would be, oh, so much easier because now some of the brave women were coming forward, or more of the brave women were coming forward. But at the same time, they were being pestered by, you know, many people who had not built the relationships that we had over the months. And they, so then were wary of who they would talk to and how often they wanted to talk, because every mm-hmm. time they do speak, they're reliving their pain. So, you know, it was a difficult process from beginning to end. And again, our goal was really to tell, you know, the Epstein story through the lens of these survivors, because they just haven't been heard. And we really tried hard to give them equal time to share whatever they wanted to. And we were surprised at how forthcoming they were.
Lisa, in the course of making the documentary, since you'd started it before his death, did you ever feel the reach of Jeffrey Epstein? Did you ever get shut down? Did you find that doors were closing and you felt it went back to him and his people?
Well, he definitely knew that the documentary was going on and being filmed. It was about the same time, not long after that, that the Miami Herald series came out. So all eyes had kind of started to focus on him again. Didn't feel any direct threats. I did personally knock on his Palm Beach mansion twice when we were tracking his flight logs. You know, we had ways to, you know, through our sources and things to figure these things out. And, you know, I knocked on his door. Of course, we wanted an interview with him. Why wouldn't we? Talked to his house manager a couple of times, and we felt he was there. But, you know, of course, he wasn't there, according to the house manager. So I made sure I identified myself, left my card, please, you know, if he would like to share his story, we would love to, you know, provide him the platform to do so. Also, we checked out his New York apartment as well when we knew he was there, and saw him coming going a few times. And there's some video in the series of him with young women, not that young, but there were some women probably in their 20s and 30s that we actually got some video of him and his employees there, like, took down our license plates. But we never felt any direct threats, and I don't believe he tried to shut us down. I think he really thought he was above the law. I really believe that. Everybody that we spoke with, all the attorneys in many of the depositions, said, you know, he never thought he'd get caught. I think, you know, no one was more surprised than Jeffrey Epstein when he was arrested in New Jersey and at Teterboro Airport. Sorry.
Before I let you go, you know, so many books, podcasts, stories have been written about Epstein already. What did you want to do differently with this doc?
Well, we wanted to really give the women the voices that they, you know, never had. You know, it was, you know, a tragedy what happened to them back in 2008, where they were never given a chance to speak out in court. He should have been put behind bars for the rest of his life then. You know, there's a secret deal behind their back. We just really wanted to give them a chance to have their voices heard. They never really, they got a little bit of that in court here in New York, but they never got to see him and face him in a courtroom and tell him about the things that he did to them and how it's affected their entire lives. So, you know, we just let them speak. You know, mm-hmm. I think that is what we owed them. We just let them tell their story, didn't probe, let them say whatever they were comfortable for. You know, it's their story. And the goal of this is really awareness, accountability, and change. And hopefully now, you know, survivors of any kind of sexual abuse will be will be respected and heard and taken seriously, because that's, you know, the most important thing here. You know, we sympathize with how they still struggle, and we celebrate, you know, how far each one has come in their own personal journey.
Yes. The name of the film is Filthy Rich. It is on Netflix. Its director is Lisa Bryant. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us.